from KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the summer salmon harvest could be 25% less than last year. Increased processor capacity is in the future for the Aleutians. And Atka mackerel are pretty tasty, but are they always nutritious? All that coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership. Listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
And by
ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has released its 2012 salmon forecast and are predicting a harvest 25% lower than last year, mostly due to a decline in pink salmon. The all-species salmon harvest last year was 177.1 million, while for this year, Fish and Game is projecting an overall catch of 132.1 million. The harvest is expected to be comprised of 120,000 king salmon outside of Southeast, 38.4 million sockeye, 70.2 million humpies, and 19.1 million chum. The projected pink salmon harvest is expected to be about 40% lower than last year's catch. The sockeye harvest is expected to come in 4% lower than 2011, while the chum salmon harvest is expected to be 12% higher than last year. We've got a link to the full 106-page forecast at kmxt.org. The CEO of the Community Development Quota Organization for the Aleutian Islands says a major expansion is coming to seafood processing plants in False Pass and Atka. KDLG's Mike Mason has the story.
Government, business, nonprofit, and tribal leaders from across the southwest region of Alaska gathered in Anchorage last Thursday and Friday for the annual economic summit put on by the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference. Among the speakers was Larry Cotter, the chief executive officer for the Aleutian Pribilof Island Community Development Association. During his presentation, Cotter spoke at length about APICTA's investments in seafood processing, including Atka Pride Seafoods, which was formed in 1994 by APICTA and the Atka Fishermen's Association. Cotter says many of the other businesses run by APICTA are struggling. He specifically referenced the seafood processing plant in False Pass. Bering Pacific Seafoods was started about 10 years ago. Cotter says APICTA had to figure out what to do with the business that was losing about $1 million a year.
And we had to make the very difficult decision to shut that operation down because we could not sustain that level of loss.
Cotter says some level of loss can be justified because of the impact that wages and taxes have in keeping a community healthy. However, he labeled continued losses as unhealthy.
It's simply not healthy to operate losing businesses and communities. People develop the wrong concept about what you're doing. We need to be empowering is what we need to do.
Cotter noted that initially APICTA focused on developing small seafood processing operations in the hope that they would not be subject to the wrath of the large seafood processors that dominate the seafood industry in Alaska. However, Cotter says that in the case of Bering Pacific Seafoods in False Pass, that idea didn't work.
We went back to False Pass, rebuilt Bering Pacific Seafoods on shore, kept it small, because we didn't want to irritate anybody. But the amount of jobs that we generate are not enough to really create an awful lot of employment in the community. We don't operate year-round. As a result, people aren't moving to the community. We generate some tax base, but not enough to really help the community. So what's happening is we lose $500,000 in a year, as we did last year. Meanwhile, nothing is happening to the population in the community except it's starting to continue to spiral down, and there's questions about whether or not the school is going to survive.
Cotter says the APICTA Board of Directors has recently reevaluated how they focus on economic development, which has resulted in measures to strengthen the seafood processing plants in False Pass and Atka.
So we have decided that this year, we have budgeted $8 million for a massive expansion of the plant in False Pass, with an additional $2 million to be spent in the next 2 years. We are buying lots from the Izanotsky Corporation so that we can build housing. We are going to operate year-round, and our plant managers, our engineers, our staff are going to be full-time residents of False Pass. We're going to encourage families to move to Falls Pass with children so that we can keep the school going, and hopefully they're going to work at our facility, earning meaningful wages and benefits. We think that that is how to, as Mr. Osterman said, define for ourselves what we want Alaska communities to look like.
Cotter confirms that EPICTA is also planning an expansion at the Shore Base plant in Atka.
We plan to spend $10 million in 2013 and 2014 to expand Atka Pride Seafoods to be a year-round operation. Similarly, bringing families back to that community so that the slight, you know, Atka is going like this. They're not spiraling down, but they're slightly tilting down. So we're going to rest that.
Currently, Atka Pride Seafoods operates seasonally from June through September. The plant annually processes about 500,000 pounds of halibut and sablefish. The EPICTA annual report for 2010 shows the organization's net worth increased by 12.8%, up to nearly $58 million. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
For years, scientists have been trying to figure out why the western stock of stellar sea lions is disappearing. According to new research, it might be because some of the fish they eat turn into junk food for part of the year. KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez has more.
If you go to an American seafood restaurant, you probably won't see Atka mackerel on the menu. But over in Japan, they love the stuff. The fish is somewhat of a delicacy. It's salty and oily, and it kind of looks like an overgrown bumblebee. Unfortunately for sushi lovers, stellar sea lions also love Atka mackerel. It makes up a major part of the endangered marine mammals diet, and the federal government has prohibited commercial fishing for Atka mackerel in the Western Aleutians in an attempt to help the sea lion population recover. Given the high stakes for conservation, a group of Canadian scientists are now trying to figure out just how important Atka mackerel is to stellar sea lion survival. David Rosen is a biologist with the University of British Columbia, and he runs a captive stellar sea lion research program in Vancouver. He's been trying to figure out if sea lion pups are getting enough of the fish, and to do that, he needs to look at how they develop and their relationship with their prey.
You can't view a sea lion as a same sea lion throughout the year. It has different requirements throughout the year. And as a sea lion physiologist, I've known that for years, but I've never thought about the other side of the equation, which is that Atka mackerel fish are not the same throughout the year. And so I was thinking in my office one day, what happens if you put those two sides of the equation together, the different requirements of the stellar sea lion and the different values of the Atka mackerel?
The UBC Marine Mammal Research Unit has been studying the feeding habits of their sea lion control group and analyzing the nutritional value of Atka mackerel at different times of year and in different regions. Rosen's initial results show that the energy density of the fish can change over 80% through the year. He's also discovered that sea lion pups eat plenty of mackerel, up to a fifth of their weight each day, but they're not always getting what they need from the fish.
Unfortunately, the times of year when it looks like Atka mackerel has less nutritional value might be the same times of year when young stellar sea lions might be trying to wean from their mothers.
Rosen thinks that could maybe be the key to the population decline. He says stellar sea lion pups in the Western Aleutians aren't starving. If anything, they're bigger than their eastern counterparts. What that suggests to him is that the Western sea lion pups could be taking not just 1 year to wean from their mothers, but two. Because the pups don't seem to be getting the food they need, their mothers may be choosing to nurse them longer, rather than give birth to another pup.
From a population level, it may not be great because there aren't as many pups being produced, but from the individual mother-pup concern, which is all the mothers are concerned with, they're more likely to produce a pup that's going to make it into the population.
If Rosen's hypothesis turns out to be right, it's unclear how it will affect rules in place to protect the sea lion. The state of Alaska and fishing industry groups have sued the federal government in an effort to overturn the ban on fishing in the Western Aleutians, and a federal judge recently upheld the restrictions. But the judge also called for an environmental impact statement that will take research like Rosen's into account when examining the government's policy. In Unalaska, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
For the sixth time in 7 years, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is projecting a directed commercial fishery for Taku River king salmon this year. The department says the number of Taku Chinook should be up from last season. The forecast calls for a run of about 48,000 kings, with an allowable catch of about 6,700 for commercial fishermen. But fishery manager Kevin Monagle says projections don't always turn into reality.
In some cases, we have had a number similar to this, or maybe a little lower, to go after, and we've decided to wait till we had in-season information and to make our management decisions based on that information alone, not the forecast.
Case in point, in 2011, the forecast called for a run of about 41,000 kings with an allowable catch of about 1,500, but a directed fishery was not allowed once managers were able to collect in-season data. Monagle says it can be a difficult fishery to forecast because the Alaska catch is set according to a treaty with Canada, which shares the Taku with the United States, and Canada gets first crack at the fish.
The first 5,000 fish surplus, Canada gets that, and we get none of it. So in recent years, when you have very small surpluses to go after, if the forecast changes even a little bit, 2-4%, that U.S. allowable catch goes away.
Monagle says Canadian managers also regulate the Taku King fishery according to in-season data, and that biologists on both sides of the border are in regular communication before and after fishing starts. May 1st is the first day a fishery is allowed to open. Monagle says the department will release more information closer to that date.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The University of Alaska Foundation recently announced a $300,000 gift from Icicle Seafoods for scholarships, student aid, research, and technology programs throughout the university system. UA Foundation spokeswoman Kate Ripley in Fairbanks says the money will go to many programs and campuses around the state, but the focus will be on fishing communities.
In Kodiak, there's $12,000 for scholarships, $3,000 for general fund support, and there's also a fund, $50,000, to expand fisheries education for secondary and post-secondary students in Craig, Ketchikan, Petersburg, Cake, Juneau, Sitka, Valdez, Kodiak, and Dillingham.
She said additional funds will be given to specific university campuses and programs.
It's an amazing, generous, and ongoing gift from Icicle Seafoods to the University of Alaska. And what's really notable about this gift, in looking back over the last 5 years, is their total amount of giving has exceeded $1 million. And what is really significant about this gift is the way Icicle spreads it around throughout the university system, specifically to rural areas and coastal communities, areas that really can benefit from a healthy seafood industry.
Gunnar Knapp, a fisheries professor at ICER at the University of Alaska Anchorage, said Icicle's grants have allowed him to offer a new course in fisheries economics and to continue tracking trends in Alaska seafood markets.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from KDLG's Mike Mason in Dillingham, KUCB's Alexander Gutierrez in Unalaska, and KTOO's Casey Kelly in Juneau. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.